Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view beginning April 20th. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Welcome to the Arts Hour. This is the Arts Commission's weekly turn at the microphone here at MPB. And each week we bring you an in-depth discussion with a different creative Mississippian. We talk to musicians, photographers, visual artists, craftspeople, authors, all types of art forms here. And over this month, the month of January, we're celebrating the upcoming Governor's Arts Awards ceremony that's going to be taking place February 6th at the Old Capitol Museum. And for each Sunday this month, we're trying to have on some of the different recipients of this year's recipients. And joining us today is Mr. Maurice Sorrell. He's a member of Jackson Southern Airs. Welcome.
I'm glad to be here, and thank God for letting me make it here through the storm.
Yeah, we're having some stormy days here in Mississippi, our version of winter here.
Yes.
Mr. Sorrell, you're a longtime member of Jackson Southern Airs, and you're going to be, the Southern Airs are going to be the Lifetime Achievement recipients in music this year. We're really excited to have you.
We're excited as well, and like you said, I'm a longtime member, but I was born a Southern Air because my father was an original member of the Southern Airs.
Yeah, I saw that in the biography.
Yes,
so
sir.
this will be the 80th anniversary of the Southern Airs, correct?
Yes.
Formed in 1940.
1940.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, kind of walk us, you've been with the group probably, what, almost 40 years now?
Yeah, almost 40 years, 38 plus.
Early 1980s?
Yeah.
So you've seen the second half, but maybe let's start off from what you know from being passed down in the group and that about the kind of the origins and what you know of the early history of the group.
Well, the early history of the group, like I said, my father was an original member, and I followed him around for years, and I got interested in the music side of it, and I started playing drums, and after a few number of years, one of our lead singers passed away, and the Lord kind of gave me a vision to go on the upper side to start just singing, not just playing drums. So since I think about 2009, I started just singing, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
What do you recall about those? Was your father one of the original members of the group?
I would say one of the originals because, like I say, he started back in the 50s. And like I say, I would follow him around to the different concerts and stuff, and he was my inspiration.
And the Southern Airs, they were around for a while before they became a recording and touring group. I think that's an important thing to bring up.
They started out, the name of the group was called the Shaw Southern Airs, because you remember there was a clothing store down on Ferris Street called Shaw's Credit Clothing Store. And they had a theme song that went along with that. And that's where they started the name the Shaw Southern Airs. And later on in the years, they got the name the Jackson Southern Airs. So that's part of that history that I remember.
And so this was a group that mostly perform. Did they have a radio show at that point, or how did their kind of touring?
Yeah, they had a radio
work?
Show that came on WOKJ back then, and each Sunday morning they would do their radio program. I think it was maybe about 15 to 30 minutes that they had on, but it was a popular program. And later on in the years, they got their own television show. And they would sing different songs for about, I say, a segment of 30 minutes. And they would have some other artists come on sometime to help expand the time on the program.
And back in the old days, the radio show was a really crucial part of kind of the working life of a group.
A group, yes.
Tell a little bit about like how that kind of got them out there in that.
Well, it got them out, the Southern Airs out there, because they recorded a song by the title of Too Late, and that was one of their biggest hits that got them started on the national traveling scene. And from that point on, some of the other members started writing different songs and stuff, and that just kind of caught on to the traveling side of the singing and everything.
And the Southern Airs, the founding members, the Williams brothers, were part of it at the beginning, or did they come in later?
Frank Williams was one of the first ones that came to the Southern Airs because of his brother-in-law being Willie Banks. He came to Jackson State and started staying with him, and I think the connection came there where Frank started playing guitar for the Southern Airs at that point. And later in the, I said about 10, 15 years later, Huey joined the group as a lead singer. So those were the two Williams brothers that came to the Southern Airs. And I got my start with the younger part of the Williams brothers back in the 60s.
Who were the Williams, who became the Williams brothers.
Became the sensational Williams
brothers. To not confuse things. Yeah.
Right. And I started playing drums and singing with them in the 60s. And we all start just traveling on the weekends as we were going to school during the week. So I couldn't go with my dad and his group, the Southern Airs, because I was still in school. So that's why I migrated to the Williams brothers.
So they were kind of like a junior group in a way to the Southern Airs.
Kind of like that, yeah.
The younger brothers, the right. Son, all these.
Right.
So did you guys go out with the Southern Airs ever as kind of
a matter of fact,
opening group?
One of the first recordings that the Williams brothers did, the recording manager, what I say, or owner of that record label, Don Roby, told Huey and Frank if they thought the Williams brothers were so good, give them part of their album. So we did one half Williams Brothers and the other half Jackson Southern Airs. And that album was called He's My Brother.
Well, that was pretty nice of them to hand over half their album to you.
That was in order to prove that they had talent to the company.
Okay.
Because they weren't willing to sign them at first when they heard them record. They said, well, maybe they are good enough, and they decide to give them part of the album.
Of course, so the Williams brothers are kind of like royalty, I guess, of Mississippi gospel. I mean, they've influenced so much.
Yeah, I would say so.
And of course, so Frank Williams, people may know him also. He part of the Southern Airs, but
he also the founder of the Mississippi Mass Choir.
Right, right. And was a long time, he was like the head of the gospel
division? Head of the gospel division at Malico.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when they opened the gospel department at Malico when Frank came to the company.
And the Southern Airs were like the first signing gospel.
Southern Airs were the first gospel group to sign to Malico.
Do you have any, I'm just curious what that was like, if that was something that they really had to convince Malico to do, because Malico was doing R&B and
blues.
Yeah,
they
blues
were doing more R&B.
Yeah.
I think for some reason, maybe Tommy Couch and Wolf Stevenson had heard the group someplace and decided they wanted to start a gospel label. So they built it up on Frank Williams and the Southern Airs. So that's history from there.
And then they kind of became, I guess, almost like the the Pied Piper. They brought all, you know, they
brought
came in
the
and opened
artists,
the door.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, because we recorded several different artists that Frank came in and produced. And I even became the in-house drummer for Malico for years. And I played on quite a few albums with them.
On all these gospel albums that were coming in.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Well, so how did you get started as a drummer? Was that something in church or what did
well,
that get going?
I got started as a drummer through high school. I played in the band in high school, and I migrated from just playing single snare to learning how to play drum set, and I started playing for the group behind that.
And your father, so he was a long time, had he been like a lifetime kind of gospel musician as well, like through his younger years?
He wasn't
and that?
So much a musician. He was more so a singer.
Singer,
because he was the original baritone singer for the group. He also could sing other parts, but he was mainly their baritone singer.
And did he ever kind of want you to do that, or did you ever have an inkling to do that?
Coerced me just by me following him that gave me the inspiration to want to do it. And I heard some other artists do it that were from out of state, and that inspired me to want to go. And like I said, the rest of history, you know, joining the Williams Brothers back in 68, we did our first tour with the Jackson Southern Airs on the West Coast. And we came back after that summer of 68, and we all started back to school, and we traveled on the weekends, and we got our notoriety from traveling to different states, and it bloomed from there.
So were you guys like high school, or how old
were you? Yeah, we were high school.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Were the younger brothers, you were all kind of like
we
the same age?
We were all kind of like the same age.
Oh, wow. That must have been really exciting stuff to be out there on the road as a high school student. Yeah. Yep.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Nancy Lottridge Anderson, president of New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advising firm and co-host of Money Talks. For over 10 years, Money Talks has been answering your personal financial questions and sharing knowledge about money management. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.
We're back on the Arts Hour, and I'm Larry Morrissey, and our guest today is Maurice Sorrell. He's a member of Jackson Southern Airs, and the Southern Airs are our Lifetime Achievement in Music recipients at the Governor's Arts Awards this year. The ceremony is going to take place February 6th at the Old Capitol. It's at 6 p.m. It's free and open to the public. Come down and meet Mr. Sorrell, the other members of the Jackson Southern Airs, as well as our other recipients.
Huey Williams and James Burks.
James Burks will be there as well. And so there's been many people through the group over the years.
Over the years, there's been numerous talented people that come through the years. Some of them are deceased now, and others have moved on to different things.
Are there any other kind of active singers who have their own group or people would know about that have been in the group in the past who have kind of gone on to do other things?
Well, the only one that went on to formulate another group was Willie Banks. After he left the group, he started his group called Willie Banks and the Messengers, and he's now deceased. And some of the other younger guys are trying to carry on that group.
So you started out, your dad was in the Jackson Southern Airs. Was he still a member when you were starting up with the Williams Brothers and touring with the Southern Airs? Or
he stayed with the Jackson Southern Airs maybe a couple of years after I joined the Williams Brothers. He had to leave because of health problems, and he wasn't allowed to travel anymore. But he still sings. He and my baby brother have a group now, they're called Truly Blessed, and they just sing locally around the area. So he's not retired from singing,
Oh,
period.
That's great. He's still doing it.
He's 92 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, he just turned 92 on the 18th of December.
Well, you know you can never retire now either, would you have that?
I always say that you can't retire on God's work anyway.
Right.
But he's more my inspiration to keep going.
Well, he's definitely, well, what do they say? If you have something that you love and you feel deeply, mm-hmm. you know, that's the thing that helps keep you motivated to go.
Right. That's right.
So now you stayed with the Williams for
14 years. 14 years, and I've been with the Southern Airs now 38 years. So combined, that's about 52 years that I've been in the gospel music industry.
Back in that, in the 60s and that, I guess the Southern Airs are known for being one of the first groups to kind of bring the instruments into the group.
That's right.
The guitar, bass, and drums.
Bass and drums, yeah.
Do you remember that, or was that before your time, that kind of, that transition?
Well, that was part of my era, because when I joined the Williams Brothers, we would go a lot of places where they wouldn't even allow drums in the church and stuff. So we kind of broke the barrier in a lot of places by doing that.
So how would that be? You'd like show up and they'd say, wait a minute. You start bringing the bass drum in and they'd say,
oh. We can't allow drums in there. And thankfully I was talented enough to have more than one talent. So when they wouldn't allow us to bring the drums in, I was just singing.
Well, that's it. So you saw kind of really that
the transition
from the all vocal to that full band.
That's right.
And I would imagine just the power of having the band behind the singers really kind of...
It kind of gave it a big boost. But a lot of people, I don't know, nowadays they hide behind the music, but true singers don't really need music at all. But the music added to our repertoire kind of gave us a boost.
Right. When you hear the albums, they're not, the vocals are always totally in front.
That's what we strive for when we record. We don't want the music to overshadow the voices, because the voices are carrying the message.
It does seem like, though, I was watching some recent videos, that you have kind of younger musicians who back you up. So
yes.
In some ways you are kind of, that's a way to, like you were mentored.
Right.
I guess that the musician spot is a mentoring kind of spot,
it
right?
Kind of let the group carry on the legacy, you know, when we decide to retire, or like I said, I can't retire, but when the Lord sees fit that we're not able to go anymore, we let the younger generation carry on.
But that's a great opportunity for them, as like you had to be. I was watching a video from last year, and mm-hmm. somebody was saying, look at that guitar player, he looks like he's 14 years old. They're probably college age, but they look very
well,
young.
The youngest guy in the group now, he just turned 21. He was the guitarist and
right.
who you probably watched and talked about.
But that's good. That's definitely that's multi-generational groups too, I'm sure, is interesting.
Cause it sure is.
I'm sure they have their ideas about things.
Yeah, they do. And they try to incorporate their little twist on what we've made foundation of, and sometimes it works for us.
One of the things that I've seen that's interesting over the last 10 or 15 years in gospel is kind of this gospel chops drumming that's kind of come up to the fore,
mm-hmm.
where people, if you're not familiar, especially the drummers working with kind of the mass choir type groups,
right?
Super high energy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like amazing drum, beyond like the most complicated rock drumming you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Playing just lots of fill. I mean, it's really, really big. It's really high energy.
Yeah, and it's filled with a lot of what the drummers would call like rudiments that they put into the playing, which I was more of a laid back drummer, which they would say mostly in the pocket, as they
right.
call it.
Kind of like the guys who played at Al Jackson for Booker T, the MGs.
Right,
that
right.
perfect time that
right.
just totally fits.
Right. I got a chance, as I was with the Williams Brothers, we got a chance to meet Gamble and Huff with Philadelphia International, and they gave me a revelation of something, that as long as the bass and the drums are matching, you don't have to do a whole lot of riffs and runs. Just stay in the pocket.
Just build that
build
background.
That pattern,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Is the gospel chop stuff, is it interesting to you, or is it just kind of like young people going crazy?
it's mostly inspiring to the young people, because they're trying to emulate a lot of the other guys and try to outdo what they're doing with the different chops, as you say.
But it is neat to see it in the gospel context and see these just amazing musicians.
Yes.
I've watched just some, there's a bunch, there's like everything now, there's YouTube videos
right.
of these guys at church, and there's four drummers and they're going back and forth
right.
trying to outdo each other.
Yeah.
It is incredible
it
to watch.
It sure is, yeah. And I decided to hang up my sticks. I said, you all can have it.
You last long enough, your style will come back around, I'm sure.
I'm sure it will, because the traditional gospel always need that pocket.
Yeah. We're talking with Maurice Sorrell from the Jackson Southerners today on the Arts Hour. And the Southerners are one of the Governor's Arts Awards recipients this year, coming up on February 6th. We'll talk a little bit about playing in the studio. You talked about that you got to work at kind of in the classic era of Malico when all those great groups were coming through.
All of the different groups would come in.
Yeah.
And like I said, Frank being the producer, a lot of the groups didn't have a proficient drummer that was qualified to record. So Brian Williams and myself, we were the two in-house drummers for Malico for a number of years, and I can't count the number of albums that we did.
Were those done like live with the group, or would you track the instruments, or how, what was the process back then?
The process was like it is now. We would track the music, and we would maybe have a lead singer kind of to guide us along through the song so we knew the pattern of everything.
And then Frank Williams, I guess, is kind of leading the sessions. And
right, that. As him being producer, yes.
How was he as kind of like a to work with in that context?
Down-to-earth guy, but he was strict on his music. It had to be kind of perfect for him. He was a perfectionist, and he produced some good albums, and a lot of his songwriting was ahead of his time.
The Williams, now they were not from Jackson originally, right?
They're from Franklin County, in a little town called Smithdale, Mississippi, which is near Macomb, Mississippi.
Did they, I guess, the older brothers came up here for school, or how did that get, what's the story on that?
Frank came up here to school to go to Jackson State, and that's where he went to school while he was staying with his brother-in-law, which Willie Banks was his brother-in-law and married his older sister, and that's how he got the connection with the Southern Airs through Willie Banks.
And then the younger brothers, were they coming up here to play? Or how did you connect? Were they living in Smithdale?
They were still in Smithdale, but like I said, by me following my dad around in different places, and they were on some concerts, and Pop Williams found out that I could play drums, and he asked me to join in with the group.
So what was the change? Was there much of a change going from the Williams brothers where it was all guys your age, I guess kind of peers, and then coming into the Jackson Southern Airs, which was an established group with, like, did you kind of have to change your style at all?
Or? No, the style was pretty much the same. Like I said, by Frank Williams being a part of the Southern Airs and the brothers, they kind of collaborated together on the different styles. And that's actually, I think the Williams brothers got their style from the Southern Airs.
Yeah, how could they not have? I mean, it's kind of like one big long group, really.
Right,
you know,
man,
they just
right.
kind of got split up by right. the ages, yeah.
And they were inspired by some other national artists along the way, maybe like some of the Dixie Hummingbirds, the older Fairfield Four, Harmonizing Four, and Swan Silvertones, and all of those.
What were the big churches or towns for your concerts in Mississippi back in back in those earlier years?
Mostly in the Delta area, like Clarksdale, Greenville, Greenwood, Tupelo, up in that area. That was kind of popular areas for us.
And that was like a every weekend, kind of Thursday night or Friday night, you head out? Or
usually on a Friday through Sunday, we try to have something booked. But then when we did tours back in the day, sometimes we'd go out on the road, which wasn't including Mississippi, and we'd stay out for maybe 3 to 4 weeks. But we can't do that anymore, you know.
That's a young man's game, right?
Yes.
You can do gospel till you're 92, but staying on the road is
That's
a young
right.
man's game.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
On Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, you get information about foods you should eat to stay in good health and tips on how to stay active. I'm Dr. Josie Bidwell, host of Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, an associate professor of preventive medicine at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Joining me on the show each week are healthcare professionals who add their expertise to the discussion. Listen to the show every Monday at 11 or subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy with your preferred podcasting app.
We're back for our final segment of the Arts Hour today. Today, our guest is Mr. Maurice Sorrell, and he is a member of the Jackson Southern Airs, and they are the Lifetime Achievement in Music recipients for this year's Governor's Arts Awards. The awards are going to be taking place on February 6th, Thursday, February 6th at 6 p.m. at the Old Capitol. The event is free and open to the public. There's a public reception before the ceremony, so you can come down and grab a snack or two and meet the Southern Heirs and meet the other recipients and then stay for the ceremony. It's all free, and it's at the Old Capitol. So once the Southern Heirs kind of had their earlier period as being kind of a local group, and then they became this, you know, recording, national recording group, what was the business like back then? Was this a, was once kind of they were, you and the Williams were, well, I guess the Williams were in the younger group, but were they, was this a full-time venture for them? Or did they, were they, or did they still have to have day jobs or?
Well, after the Too Late album got its halt on the road and people started requesting to hear the group, that's when they got started on the road traveling nationally. And a lot of them left their careers of working and started just traveling full time.
But that requires basically you got to go as much as you possibly can
in order to kind of make ends meet, like you was fixing to say. And it became a career that I loved to do because I loved music, I loved meeting different people, and I loved singing God's word.
Non-musicians, you know, they see the documentaries on the whatever cable channel that has stuff about musicians, and the musicians are in these big buses, and they pull up, and they, you know, they get ushered to their green room, and right. The roadies come in and set up all the gear.
Right.
Tell us how, you know, how the, talk about the gospel circuit and how that's a little bit different, maybe.
That was an evolution with that for us, because when we first got started, we did our own setups. We had to bring in the equipment, set up the sound equipment and everything, because when we went out on the road, we had our own equipment and everything. So we wanted our sound to be special and try to get as close to the record sound as we possibly could.
And you were in like a, you have a van or a, what kind of,
when
what
we
would be
first
traveling
started
in?
Out, when I was with the Williams Brothers, we first started out, we were in a station wagon. That's a funny story about how we ever went out of the station wagon into a van, because I decided I wanted to take the station wagon and go visit a young lady. And we were supposed to go sing that night. And somehow time was getting away from me, and I've kind of looked at the time and headed down the highway, and we were on this gravel road, and somehow the station wagon got away from me, and then I ended up in the woods.
Uh-oh.
So that totaled the station wagon.
Oh, no.
That made the transition from the station wagon to the van.
So you just helping get to be more professional, right?
Right.
You guys wanted to look professional showing up, not in a station wagon. You
know. I guess that was God's way of bringing us exactly. Transformation.
Fellas, you're not going to believe this, but God says we got to get a van.
We got to get a van.
And then with the Williams Brothers, was that like a weekend thing where you would leave out and come and do those kind of drive back and
do
and
the
forth.
Tours, yeah, yeah. Like I said, we would do that on the weekends and come back and go to school. And once we all finished high school, we all decided to make a career of it. And we started writing different songs, which came popular. And like I said, the rest is history, because the group is still going.
Yeah. What led to your move from the Williams Brothers over to the Southern Heirs?
Unfortunately, in 1981, I had colon surgery, and I had to quit traveling for a while. So while I was recuperating, Frank Williams came in and offered me a job, which at first I wasn't playing or singing. He had me helping to book some of the dates for the group. At that time, I would book some dates, and occasionally I would go out on the road with him, and he'd ask me to sing background on a song or two. Later on, their drummer at the time, Brian Williams, he decided he wanted to leave the group. So they, knowing that I could play drums, they kind of just threw it in my lap. And it went on from there, from 83 on up to now.
And did you make that? And so, or and then you said earlier you transitioned from being in the band to being a singer later on. Yeah. So what's it like now? What are you guys still writing? Or what's your in terms of like writing, recording?
We're kind of in a sabbatical right now. Maybe possibly latter part of this year we might come out with a new project. We're contemplating on doing something.
And you record those kind of in the area, I guess, or do you go out?
Okay. Yeah, we try to stay within the area and try to not travel too far off to do any work anymore.
So what's your, you talk about being gone for, you know, weeks and months back in the old days. What's the typical kind of Jackson Southerners kind of, before we got started, we were talking about kind of different places that y'all used to go kind of this time, you go to warmer places when it's cold. You know?
Right, especially California. Yeah. We would be in California like the middle of January until the end of January, and we come back and then we maybe take off a few days in February and start back in March in the Midwest, and we go on the East Coast, and gospel is always prevalent in the Carolina areas.
And these are, I know there's a lot of big programs, kind of the classic, you know, where there's 9 or 10 groups that play at a, you know, a large church or an auditorium. Are those, how do those mix in with like your own kind of feature shows or performances at churches?
Well, on concerts like that where you have more than 3 to 4 groups on concert, we kind of have to limit our program, cut it down a little bit rather than somewhere we're in total concert by ourselves. Well, maybe about 30 to 45 minutes when we're on with that many groups.
So you have these like big programs, mm-hmm. and then you have kind of your own concerts. Mm-hmm. If you went out for a week or two, is it always one thing or the other, or is it a mixture? And how does that in terms of the types of shows that you're doing?
The types of songs that we're doing.
Or the shows. So like you might do, is it like there'll be one big program type show where you're mm-hmm. with 10 other groups, and then there's a bunch of kind of featured performance ones of the Southern Airs?
Well, usually on the California tour, we're mostly in concert. We carried some other artists out there with us a couple of years to introduce them to the West Coast. Like we took the Williams Brothers, the Christian Airs. One time, I think we took the Canton Spirituals out with us. But we were exposing them to the West Coast. But when we do stuff like that, like you said, we have to cut our concerts down in order to give them time to do their shows.
We're talking with Maurice Sorrell from the Jackson Southerners on the Arts Hour, and they are one of the Governor's Arts Awards recipients this year, February 6th at the Old Capitol. So gospel is like any other form of music. It never, you know, if it's going to be relevant to people, it has to change. It can't stay the same. So there's been a lot of changes in God. I mean, if people tune in thinking about, you know, what they heard 30 years ago, it's very different.
But it's changing in some aspect, but traditional gospel will always be the same. It will be the roots. Even the contemporary artists are coming back to some of the traditional sound of gospel, or taking some of the lyrics from the traditional songs and putting a different twist to them.
People are looking for authenticity too, right?
Right, and that's right.
How can you be more authentic than the Jackson Southerners, you know?
Yeah, because everything starts from scratch here, you know. We don't try to emulate anyone else and just try to be original.
So the group is also, I mean, you're getting the Governor's Arts Award, but this is beyond, I mean, you guys have a shelf full of other awards from over the last few decades.
A few awards over the years. Like I said, we were nominated for different Stellas, and we won a couple of Stella awards, and then we were nominated for a Grammy in the 90s. And like I said, we have several different awards from different cities that we've gone to. And people just recognize us for our talent and try to accommodate us for.
So today we're hearing some tracks from your kind of your greatest hits. With a group that has such a long history, how do you figure out what your song list is going to be? Because I would imagine you probably have second or third generation fans coming
to
the group, to the concerts.
The way we really put that together is by the radio airplay. We find out what they're playing in certain areas, and that's how we evolve into putting our concerts together. There's no special, just one show that we do. But there are some songs that we do every night, but then there will be songs that will be played in that particular area that we would have to sing before we leave.
So a show in South Carolina might be different from a show in Pennsylvania or something.
That's right, because they might be playing something totally different.
So, you know, being a gospel, carrying a message, you know, carrying, you know, a religious message, I'm sure people take a lot from your music. And I'm just curious about, like, have you ever had, people coming up afterwards and talking, you know, kind of giving personal testimony to the, how your music has helped them.
We've had that happen a lot of times. And that's a lot of my inspiration to keep going. And then we had the fan base that would write into the company and tell how certain songs have pulled them through certain situations. And that helps me too, because me being an ordained minister as well, I like seeing people come to Christ, and them telling us how our songs inspired them helps me.
Have you had people have a conversion experience as part of a concert or kind of come to you asking for guidance afterwards?
Yes, we sure have. And that has happened quite a bit. And like I said, that's my inspiration to keep going. And I think that's why God really called me into the ministry, to inspire the other people that come to us saying that our songs inspire them. And, you know, we're here to be a blessing to them through song.
And you don't know who's in that room and what they're going through either, but you know that there might be the possibility that you could reach them.
That's right. That's my prayer every night before we go on stage, is that someone receive a blessing through our song and our ministry, something that we might say in a song that might help them in their situation.
So do you pastor a church, or what
no,
is your ministry?
I'm just, God told me my platform is what I'm doing is singing.
Okay.
I'm evangelizing in song.
And it must be, I guess it's a lot different than you're in front of people, but it's not like hitting them with a million words like a preacher would.
No. I've also taken some seminary classes, and God told me preparation time is not lost time, so when I get ready to elevate you into the spoken word, I'll let you know. But as for now, you sing my word.
But less is more, probably, you know?
Maybe so.
You can hit the bigger impact.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me, and I'm really excited about the awards on the 6th of February.
Yeah, everyone, please come out and meet Mr. Sorrell and the other members of the Southern Airs. Old Capitol Museum, Thursday, February 6th. We'll be starting at 4:30 with a reception. 6 o'clock will be the ceremony. You can meet all of them. You can meet the other recipients that include Steve Forbert, the singer-songwriter, Richard Kelso, who's a visual artist, and folks from the Tougaloo Arts Collection are some of the other recipients.
Well, like they say, be there or be square.
Absolutely. I don't want to meet you there. I want you to
beat me there.
Yeah, yeah. We got to work our gospel stuff up here.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
If you miss this, you'll be
missing
a treat. Thank you again very much.
All right. Thank you.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB public media app.